Hey, everybody. Welcome to season two of True Crime IRL, True Crime in Real Life. This is a new limited series called The Manchester Mysteries. You'll still be getting real life stories of crime and unsolved cases, but all wrapped up in a very different package. This season, I'm concentrating on the captivating stories that have come out of one particular small Midwestern town called Manchester. Manchester is both weird and wonderful, with a full cast of interesting characters who have some unique stories to tell. I'll be presenting you with tales of murder, mayhem, and crimes of passion. And I'll be bringing you everything from missing persons cases to questionable suicides, and even a homicide that went unsolved for 40 years. There'll be an element of local folklore to some of our tales, but also a healthy dose of science, DNA technology, forensics, history, government, law, and so much more. And yes, it's all out of one little community in small town America. If you think you had our country's heartland all figured out, well, guess again, because I'll be bringing you stories this season that would make Ted Bundy blush. Season 2 of True Crime IRL, The Manchester Mysteries, debuts January 14th, 2022, and is available everywhere you get your podcasts. Until then, lock your doors, people, even if, or especially if, you live in Manchester. Bye-bye. Welcome to True Crime IRL, True Crime in Real Life. I'm your host, Kelly Behrens-Brink. Hey everyone, it's Kelly from True Crime IRL, and we are wrapping up season two, The Manchester Mysteries. But before we do that, I wanted to share with you this awesome, interesting interview I did with Sheriff Deputy Travis Hemsath. Deputy Hemsath was the lead investigator on the Cornrake murder case, and you've probably heard about that. It was a very high-profile case. A lot of big podcasters have done episodes on it. Bailey Sirian did an episode of her show on this case. Joseph Scott Morgan did an episode recently of Body Bags on this case. And there have been a ton of other people who have talked about the case. But I was super lucky to live in the same town as Travis Hemsath, and I got to interview him all about the case from the very moment that he went on duty the day that Amy Mullis was murdered. So I hope you guys really enjoy this interview. There is one more episode of True Crime IRL Season 2 after this one, and that's going to be it. And then we're going to take a little break before Season 3. So hang tight, enjoy, and I will see you guys soon. What are you doing on Saturday, April 16th? Nothing? Something? Cancel your plans and come hang out with Captain from True Crime Garage, Bob Ruff from Truth and Justice, and me, Kelly from True Crime IRL. That's right, Saturday, April 16th, doors open at 7 p.m., show is at 7:30. We're going to be live at the Wealthy Theater in Grand Rapids, Michigan. You're not going to want to miss this unique and one-of-a-kind event. We always have a phenomenal time at these live shows, and we're going to be doing a meet and greet afterwards. You're really not going to want to miss it. So again, that's Saturday, April 16th in Grand Rapids, Michigan at the Wealthy Theater. You can buy tickets at captainfathands.com/events, or you can go to True Crime IRL for more info as well. But again, buy tickets at captainfathands.com/events. Until next time, lock your doors, people. Bye-bye.
Yeah, so my name is Travis Hemsath. I'm a investigator with the Delaware County Sheriff's Office. I've been in law enforcement for roughly a little over 15 years. currently in Delaware County. I obtained my degree, and I was actually, I started off as a deputy sheriff with the Howard County Sheriff's Office for about 3.5 years. And then I was hired with the Delaware County Sheriff's Office, and I've been here since. So
you're not originally from Manchester?
No, I'm originally from the Cresco area.
What was your title on the Mullis case, like lead investigator or what?
Yep, it'd be the lead investigator for the case. We were assisted by the DCI, couple agents there as well.
Take me back to that fall. Obviously, as a sheriff, you're aware when 911 calls come in and stuff like that. What was your role like early on in this case? Because everyone was saying it was an accident. So,
right, yeah, the incident actually occurred. I'm not specific on my times here. I'd have to revert back to my reports, but I believe the call came in around noon. I actually didn't come on to my shift until about 5 that night. So that is when I started in the evening. And I revisited the scene. That was my first step, I guess. And then we went from there as far as investigating the scene and then the autopsy. And then I actually issued more search warrants after that. I believe I executed about 19 or 20 search warrants on the case.
It was called an accident at first. Todd called, called 911 and said she had a tragic farming accident. So was it right away that you guys were kind of thinking it needed a little more investigation? Or when a death like this happens, is it a routine thing to just really dive in and look at all the options and stuff?
Well, it was pretty evident to begin with. Obviously, the body was at the local hospital. So that's when the local physician had noticed the injuries, I guess, weren't consistent with a fall. It was later at the autopsy, I believe the next day, I had went down to Ankeny and we performed an autopsy. And that's when we determined the injuries that Amy had sustained. And it wasn't consistent with the story that was being told.
Right.
And that's how we observed six injuries. Mm-hmm. And a lot of according to the medical examiner, Amy was struck with the corn rake up to 3 times because of the different angles that how the tines penetrated her back.
Yeah, that's pretty telling, I think. It would be pretty crazy to fall on the corn rake, like I said in my podcast episode. 3 times.
I
fell on the corn rake. Oh, wait, let me get up. Oh, I'm going to fall on the corn rake again. Like,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, you're not going to fall on a corn rake.
Yeah.
Remove it from your body.
Right. Well, because it was in her back too. She would have to pull it from like behind out of her back, fall on it again.
And I'm not sure if the medical examiner touched on it, and I don't want to get it too in depth with it, but I mean, we're talking several inches of penetration on each injury.
Yeah.
So for someone to say to fall on it, remove it several inches from your body, and then fall on it again, and it goes in even further, and then fall on it again, and it goes in even further, ultimately causing enough injury for death.
I
don't know how anybody would believe that. Let's put it that way.
So it was apparent that it was a homicide right off the bat. And in my line of work, it's always the husband that did it.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's like who you look at, the people closest to the victim. It's very rarely some random person who just decided to come onto the property and kill someone. You know, it's usually like family, friend, lover, boyfriend, husband, whatever. So
there's always a motive. That's as investigations. I mean, you're always looking for a motive.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
That's where you would start.
Yeah.
In most cases.
Yeah.
You know, every case is different. Every case is unique. I mean, you can't sit back and say that it's always one way or the other. I mean, it's always every case is different.
Let's
put it that way.
Yeah.
And that's why you have to dig in and you have to find obviously evidence.
Yeah.
And build your case based on the facts.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was apparent that it was a homicide, and you guys, or you, like, started to dive into that. You started requesting search warrants. Would that be the first thing that you do in a case like this?
Well, there's really not a first thing. It's just you dive in, and you basically do it all at once. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're doing interviews. Interviews are going to be your first, and then, you know, you're going to be doing search warrants. Then you're going to be basically reaching out a little further, basically wherever it takes you. I mean, you can do an interview, and if that takes you somewhere else, you're going to go do that interview. If that interview results into a search warrant, then you would issue search warrants. You'd go search. You'd preserve evidence. Submit evidence to the lab. It's a lot. It's a lot of work. You know, and that's why we, you know, there's multiple deputies, agents working on a case, generally speaking.
If it's not just like traffic stops or going to this 911 call, it's a lot of investigating and stuff too. A lot of behind the scenes work.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on your department. You know, for our department, we have investigators, one including myself. Even your patrol deputies are going to be doing certain investigations.
Yeah.
Larger investigations, generally speaking, your investigators take the lead role on that. And if they need assistance, they ask for assistance, you know. And usually it's all about teamwork, you know. All the guys, no matter title or no title, everyone's going to dig in and do what they need to do to have the end result at the end of the day.
Okay, so your first interviews were probably, I'm guessing, with Todd Mullis and maybe Tristan, the son, since they were the ones who found Amy's body in the barn.
Right, right.
I've heard a lot about Todd's demeanor and how it was odd. I've heard a lot of I've talked to a lot of people in the community, and he was a little bit of an odd duck anyway, maybe a little bit cold. What can you say about your first interview with Todd after finding Amy's body and everything? What did it something seem off to you in your gut?
Well, I actually didn't perform the first interview. We reached out to DCI, and we had Agent John Turbot actually perform the first interview with Todd. Okay.
He's pretty well known. He's,
John? Yeah. Great guy. Yeah. Yep. Excellent. The whole crew is excellent to work with.
Yeah.
He actually did the interview with Todd. As far as demeanor goes, like you said in your podcast, I mean, everybody reacts differently. You know, as far as making your own judgment, that's something for, you know, the jury to watch the interview and to make their own determination as far as what they believe. Yeah. Do I believe there was things in the interview that threw red flags? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There was. You don't need a confession. Let's just put it that way. You don't need a confession in an interview. All you need is admissions. Admissions of guilt and provable lies. That's huge. So you don't need someone to come out and say, yes, I did it. Mm-hmm. All you need is admissions. And a big thing is, like I said before, provable lies.
Yeah.
I think that's huge because provable lies is deception.
Yeah. And it shows a pattern of deception.
Absolutely.
Why are they lying about this? What, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So one of the search warrants you obtained was for the electronics in the house.
Right.
That was a big one. You talked a lot about this in the trial. You confiscated laptops, iPads, cell phones, all of that stuff. And whose job was it to go into that and get all the, retrieve all that information?
My job.
So you must be pretty technologically savvy.
I don't know if I'd go to that extent. I try my hardest.
Yeah, you did great.
There's a lot of things I don't know. But when I don't know, I generally reach out to somebody that does know, and I find the right answers.
Yep.
But yes, there was a search warrant that was executed at the residence. We revisited the crime scene, you would say, or the residence itself. And yes, we seized all the electronics, whether it be laptops, cell phones, iPads, and DVR system for the there was actually a camera system set up at the residence on the Hog Building.
We'll talk about that in a little bit.
But yeah, no, we ended up seizing all that stuff, and then I executed warrants to search all that material.
And one of the things you brought from the home was Todd Mullis's iPad, and on that iPad you found like 700 pages of searches. And a lot of those were, I would say, very incriminating. And in my opinion, just my opinion, those searches that you retrieved make the case, I think. Like, I don't know about how trials work exactly or sure. what's, but those internet searches. Right. I was like, he did it. So talk about that, like the process of retrieving those 700 pages. And when you started, what was that like moment when you first saw the first search that said something like killing cheating women? Were you like, did a light bulb go off in your head? Were you like, yep, this is it? Were you excited? I mean, as an investigator, were you like, ding, ding, ding?
Well, obviously, you know, we can see the electronics, and then you also have to have probable cause to go within the device to retrieve the information. And yeah, I mean, we executed a warrant. I went into the original iPad. Obviously, upon seizure of the iPad, you know, Todd had verbalized to me that it was his iPad, and in fact, it was actually in his tractor.
Oh, okay.
And tractor, one of the farm equipment, mm-hmm. I guess, at the other farm. So they actually went and got retrieved that item for me, and I seized it, and it actually had a passcode on it. And I had just asked Todd politely if I could get the passcode for it, because, you know, I obviously he's not wanting to hide anything.
Mm-hmm. He states, wants, I guess, to be cooperative.
Right,
yeah.
Right, you know. And his attorney was actually present during the search warrant, and he didn't want to give me the passcode at first. You know, he refused to give it to
I
me
saw
until
that.
He consulted with his attorney, and then
yeah.
obviously they ended up giving me the passcode. But actually, within that device... and I think I spoke a little bit about this at trial. I don't remember what my testimony was.
Yeah. Yeah.
To the full extent.
We're not holding you to be verbatim, but yeah. yeah.
You know, so obviously everybody that's familiar with Google, you can click on it and it shows your past, let's just say 5 to 10 last searches. You know, there was a search in there and I believe it said organs of the body.
Yes.
You know, so that was pretty evident there. That's a weird search.
Yeah. Where are vital organs in the body located?
Right.
Something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
So we ended up using an identifier for his Gmail to obtain his Google searches.
Oh, okay.
Let's say. Yeah.
Okay.
His past history Google searches.
Did you have to like contact Google for that or?
Yes. That's a separate search warrant.
Okay.
Right.
Oh, you had to file a search warrant for that, too, to talk to Google?
Through Google.
Okay.
Because the search engine, and I believe I'm right. I could be wrong.
Yeah,
so
no,
I don't
yeah,
get,
you're fine.
I don't want to get hammered on this. But so the device, I believe, only saves a certain amount of search history.
Okay.
So Google actually, they may or may not maintain extended amount of Google searches.
Right.
Sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't.
Yeah.
That's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
They don't maintain it for law enforcement purposes. So we ended up, I ended up submitting a warrant through Google, and we obtained search history for X amount of time. I can't tell you the exact number of pages we got back, but then we started going through them pages and seeing the search history. I think we got about a year's worth.
Yes. Yep.
And yeah, there were some pretty wild searches in there. Let's just put it that way. So.
Yeah. Yes, and I talked about that in my podcast episode I did on that too. In my opinion, as a layperson, I'm like, there is no way he didn't do this after seeing what he searched for. But
right. Well, I'm just going to go out on a limb here, and I hope I don't get any backlash from this.
Yeah.
But you can, as an observer, and I'm sure everybody observed, and I hope everybody that took interest in this trial actually sat down and watched the trial from day one to the last minute. And I hope they actually took notes and followed it extreme. Not just the highlights from other news networks or anything like that, but actually took notes, because you can see during his, he actually testified.
Mm-hmm. Which is rare for an accused murderer to take the stand.
But you can see within his testimony, his attorneys that actually asked him, did you make this search? Yes, I did. Did you make this search? Yes, I did. Oh, what was this search about? Oh, it was about this. So he was agreeing to all these searches, but did anybody take note of which ones he didn't say that he searched?
Okay, yeah.
It was the most damning ones. How to kill your cheating spouse. They never mentioned that one. So he agrees to 98% of the searches.
Right.
But then 5, he never mentions. So then, you know, an argument is, well, he never made them searches. Well, he agreed to 98%, but you leave out the 5 most important ones.
Yeah.
So, I mean, seriously, common sense, what does that tell you?
But the prosecutor talked about
sure.
those that
yes,
they left
the
out.
No, well,
no.
No, the defense did. The
okay.
defense had asked him I believe, don't quote me on this, mm-hmm. but the defense had asked him about certain searches.
Okay.
Did you make this search?
Right, yes. Right, right.
Did you make this search about, I think it was bodies bodies floating, like buoyancy?
Yes.
And somewhere along some of them, or like firearm accidents within a home, he had related that to like hunter safety.
Yeah.
So there was an excuse for every single one, but there was no excuses for the five, how to kill your cheating spouse. And
I can't think of any possible excuse he could have made for that. He would have thought of something, but
right. But they never went there.
Yeah. No.
But so, and I know there's a lot of argument, and I've heard it from some people that he didn't make them searches. Well, them individuals, they never actually sat down and read the search history, because
right.
you can see. So Todd had a Gleaner combine, and I mentioned this in
yes,
trial.
Yes.
Yeah. He was very passionate about hunting. He was very passionate about farming, and that type of activities, mm-hmm. right? So during the search history, you would see searches about Gleaner combines. And then shortly thereafter, there's a search about.
Exactly.
And I'm not sure exactly what the searches are. I have to look.
Like killing cheating women or something like to that
yes,
effect.
Yes, exactly.
Like
to that
something
effect.
Incriminating.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was within a time frame.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I said, like, in
right.
my
yeah,
podcast
you said
episode.
That in your podcast.
Yeah.
So you caught on, you caught it, but I think a lot of people haven't caught that.
Right. I think a lot of people haven't, too, because, yeah, anybody could make those searches, but you have to look at the window, the whole window, like someone searching for, like, something about combine insurance or, you know, like
right.
something random, like farm insurance or something, which would be Todd, and then a minute later, like, searching for something about killing your wife or something, and then back to farming, and then back. So
right.
it's
yeah.
the pattern there. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yep.
And, you know, we actually had a couple, we actually had a couple jury members tell us that that's all they needed to see. So
mm-hmm.
they caught on to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a certain age group that's going to see that, and then that's all they need to see.
Right.
Which ultimately, it's up to the jury. It's not up to me. I mean, my opinion does not matter here.
You just collect the information, do the investigation,
right.
and present it.
And we present it, and then, you know, where it goes from there, that's the result of it. I mean, we have no influence whatsoever on it.
Yeah. I want to ask your opinion on so many things.
I'm sure
but
you do.
You're right. I mean, so he's been convicted, so we can label him as a murderer. Like, that's a fact.
Yes, he was convicted, yes.
Yeah, so do you know where that's at with, like, an appeal process or anything right now? Or
I do not. I actually don't follow it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he has an option to appeal. I'm sure that's underway.
Okay, back to the day that the murder occurred. You weren't on duty when it happened, but was her cause of death, I don't remember, blood loss or something like that, or just internal trauma? Do you know anything about that?
I know the certain vital organs that the fork tines did strike. Obviously, it was fatal.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
So the crime scene was being investigated by, do you guys do that, or is there a special person who does that, crime scene investigator or something?
I actually did that night. I went out, photographed, examined the scene, looked for evidence, I guess you'd say. And so I did it that night. And then when we went back, I don't know if it was a day later, a couple days later, and actually a search warrant, we actually re-examined it in daylight.
Okay.
Daylight time. So.
Now, an injury like that, some people would think that maybe Todd would have been covered in blood or something like that.
No.
But I don't think when a fork goes in, it wouldn't. There would be no like spatter.
No.
Or would there?
No. Amy was wearing a t-shirt, a sweatshirt, and a Carhartt coat.
Okay.
So, I mean,
wow.
any blood loss from there is getting soaked up by the shirt, the sweatshirt, and a Carhartt coat. And I don't know if anybody really knows how, let's say, tough a Carhartt coat
is.
Oh, it's
incredibly
right?
tough. But the tines of the forks went through the Carhartt coat and everything.
Absolutely
all
did.
Those layers.
Yep.
That's unbelievable.
Yep.
That must have been a sharp corn rake. Or are they just, I mean, or like it was just so much force.
There's a lot of force. In
yeah.
my opinion, and I shouldn't, I'm not going to be opinionated on this, but common sense would tell you, yes, there's a lot
yeah.
of force behind that.
Yeah.
To go through a Carhartt coat, to go through a sweatshirt and a t-shirt, and to impale multiple inches into a body, there is a lot of force behind that.
Yeah. I mean, I probably couldn't inflict that level of force. It would have to be someone stronger, I would think. Definitely not a 13-year-old.
This is where we use common sense.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't know that she was wearing all that stuff. Yeah. I didn't know much. I didn't know much about the actual scene or anything. So.
Right, right.
Wow.
Yep, right. And you got to think about it, too, though. Every entry, so the medical examiner had said up, I believe she said up to three.
Mm-hmm. That's what was up kind to of, three, that between was, two and three.
Yeah, that was kind of her conclusion. Because every injury was at a different angle.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way you can take four tines and make them go six different angles. Like, it's not possible. So no. It had to be up to two to three times, right? Mm-hmm. So every strike went through all them layers in different spots.
Yeah.
So
not only did she have injuries from the corn rake, but she had abrasions on her face, her hands, her yep. knees. So it really looked like there had been a struggle involved.
It was either a struggle or an all-out assault.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a contusion, I believe that's how the medical examiner had said, underneath her, under the jaw, like an upward strike, you would say.
Yep. So it was not just taken from behind with the corn rake and like surprise. There was definitely something going on in there. So trying to think, like, how long would that take? An altercation like that, hit with the corn rake, the window of time that Tristan was talking about. At first he said he was never gone at all, and then he changed his testimony later in the trial, kind of was like, well, there was a window of time that my dad was unaccounted for.
And what's that called?
A lie? What is that called?
What he was being deceptive, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, so
we're supposed to believe the second version, right?
Right. No. I mean, the second version may not be true either. We don't know.
There's obvious time in between.
Yeah.
So nobody can actually pin down the exact right. minute.
Yeah. The only thing we do know is that Amy was on her laptop. She sent an email to her.
No, it was her phone.
Her phone. Okay, she sent an email or a message to her lover, Jerry Frazier.
Right.
And then we know that happened. I don't know. I say it
around. It was around 10 a.m.
Yeah, and then we know when Todd called 911,
which was around noon.
Yeah. So we know
you got a window of roughly about a 2-hour window.
Yeah. Yikes. Let's talk about the 911 call.
Sure.
Opinions aside, with your own ears, did you hear what the prosecutor was saying and then what I said in my podcast episode? Something about, look what you did, you cheating whore, or you fucking whore, or whatever. Did you hear that, or do you think we were reading into it too much?
You know, I don't want anyone to base their decision, let's say, on that.
Mm-hmm.
You hear what you hear.
Yeah.
I can't tell anybody what to hear, what not to hear, what it says, what it doesn't say.
Mm-hmm.
Exclude that fact.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to the other facts. Don't get hung up on the last fact.
Right.
I mean, it's just another
possible thing that could implicate him. Or like,
right.
Yeah.
Right. But if you exclude that.
Mm-hmm. There's so much other stuff.
There is. There's so much other great evidence. You know, that, mm-hmm. and obviously the jury got it right, you know, so.
Yeah, I agree. Did you talk to Amy's friends? Did you interview Amy's friends and in the course of this investigation?
Most of them, I think friends and community members as well.
Mm-hmm.
I performed about 49 interviews.
Oh, geez. Wow.
I think John had performed.
From the DCI?
Yeah, so, John Turpitt.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Okay.
I'm not sure how many he did. Yeah. 25 or 30. Yeah. So.
But you did talk to Amy's friends, and and that came into the trial as well.
Yes.
Like what they knew about their relationship.
Sure. Yep.
And that's all pertinent information, isn't it? And a trial like this, the friends always said that he was scary and controlling, maybe a little abusive. And they testified that Amy told them if she ever ends up dead, it'll be because of him, stuff like that. That stuff is more than just gossip. You know, there is a place for that to come into the trial, and it did.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's even confirmed. I mean, it's not like anybody just made this up. I've confirmed it through text messages with friends.
Yeah.
You know, that's some of the search warrants we did with, you know, for Amy's text messages. You know, so I mean, it's confirmed. It's not a joke. It's not a lie.
She was in fear for her life, I think, to some extent.
There was definitely some concerns there, I would say. Yeah.
Nobody ever really thinks that that's going to happen. I'm sure she didn't ever in her wildest dreams think that he would follow through with that. But
right.
Yeah, he did. So back to the crime scene. I'm kind of jumping all over the place here. But okay, did you guys ever take the corn rake and like test it for his DNA or fingerprints or anything like that? I don't know if that's a thing that you can do.
No, I know that got brought up. I don't know if it got brought up in trial, but I hear people talk about it. But what you have to know is you're never going to get a fingerprint off that rake.
Because it was like porous old wood.
Yeah, there's a different texture. There's no way you're going to get latent prints off of that. It's not going to happen. And if obviously you're defendant, why would you pull DNA? It's his corn rake.
That's true.
Then some people say, well,
what if it was somebody
else?
Person, yeah.
We're not there. There's no evidence to lead to anybody else. There's just not. Let's just put that. There's an argument for everything. I mean, no matter what you do in life, there's going to be an argument.
Now, if there had been another person on that property, maybe we would have seen it because there were cameras.
Sure.
But oops, those cameras had mysteriously been disabled the day of the murder. Am I right?
The one camera was.
Okay.
The one that actually faces the red shed where Amy was allegedly found.
Right.
With the rake in her back. Yeah.
What a weird coincidence that was.
Yeah, it was strange. We seized the DVR and went through it, and we had video beforehand. I forget the dates. I think I had mentioned them in trial, but we had video on that camera up to a certain point, and then through the time of the incident, we had no video, and then the video resumed soon thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
Was it suspicious? Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
that's definitely suspicious, you know? And weird, and I don't think there is really any such thing as a coincidence, so... He said it was the cats that did it.
The cats knocked off whatever. And I mean, these cats are something else.
I know. Right. I mean, that could have been a total game changer.
Oh, absolutely.
If the cameras had been going, but I think Todd was smart enough to disable
those. Well, I think he made reference. He had went back to the cameras.
Mm-hmm.
This is before we seized the unit. He had went back to the cameras to look at them to see if he could, you know, figure out the truth, I guess. I think that's what he said. I'm not quite sure, but... you know, he did go back and reference the camera system.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he deleted the video, I mean, that's up to you to decide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had video before, we had video after.
I think he disabled the video and then...
I mean, anything's possible. I mean, you hear them questions all the time. Is it possible? Sure, anything's possible.
Anything's possible.
Yeah, I mean, but you got to use your head. You got to use common sense. And is this believable, you know?
Was this your first homicide case that you've worked on, or have you worked on others?
Yeah, this would have been my first one. I've assisted in another. I mean, we've done death investigations, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. This was a big one.
Yeah, this was one of the bigger ones. Let's put it that way.
I think you came across really great in the trial. Very professional, calm, cool, and collected. You sounded good. And I think your investigation was very thorough. So thumbs up on that.
Well, let's put it this way. We turned over every stone.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody was to ask me today, is there anything else you could have done? No, there's not.
Mm-mm.
Absolutely nothing, in my opinion. We did everything. That's why it took so long. I mean, I know there was community members that were nervous, but you know, we have to do it right. We have to get it all done.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to jump the gun. We want to get it right. And we got it right. We presented it. And obviously, it was a trial and the jury found him guilty. So, I mean... it was a long road. We had a lot of great people working on the case, and it turned out really nice.
Yeah.
So,
was it a really stressful time in your life?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely it is. I mean, I didn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much pressure on your shoulders because, you know, if you don't solve this. Then
oh
what?
My gosh! Then you get backlash too for that. There's
oh, you absolutely do. I mean, you let's just put it this way: you never win in this career, you know. But you know, for Amy's family and friends, I'm just glad we did solve this case.
Mm-hmm.
We had a conclusion to it, so there's closure. Because if if there's not closure, there's always going to be questions.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people still have questions, but there's certain things you're not going to know.
Right.
People are going to speculate and you're never going to know the true answers. It's extreme mob pressure for these types of cases, you know, and I know there's other investigators out there that work these all the time, mm-hmm. I don't ever want to, let's put it that way.
No.
I mean, you know, but guys put a lot of time into this stuff and it's well worth it in the end.
Well, I'm glad we live in a community where it doesn't happen often, but it does happen. There have been some crazy things that have happened since I moved here.
It does. And I don't want to put a spotlight on Delaware County. I mean, this is a great community.
It is, really.
We have great people, great schools, but it happens everywhere.
It does.
You know, it's just like drugs. Mm-hmm. You can't sit back and say, well, this town's just drug infested. I mean, every community has it.
Is this town drug infested?
We won't get into that. No. We do, let's put it this way. We do a very good job, whether the public sees it or not. We do a very good job with keeping up on burglary, thefts, and drug work. And we will always try to do that.
Have you had personally backlash? Have you had people who are like, Todd's not guilty. Suck it, Hemsath. I don't know. Not that. I mean? Have you had people who disagree with you?
I have. You know, and honestly, what I would say to them is there's no way you can be upset with me.
Yeah.
Whether you want to be or not. And if you want to be, that's fine. That's fine. Just when people call, we have to come. Mm-hmm. We investigate it.
Yeah.
I didn't convict him. The jury did. I didn't even present the case. The prosecution did. So whatever they determined is what they determined. It had no effect on me. I went out, I gathered the information, they presented it, and your jury convicted. So, I mean, I do what I got to do, and I pass it on.
Yep.
And that's it. I mean, I'm sure, I have had people, I've had messages and
that's what I was wondering.
Sure.
I've had messages and
I don't care. I don't read them. All I would say is rewatch the case, sit down with a pen and paper. Don't miss a second of it. Write, take notes, and then go back and ask yourself, did he do it? You're going to see a lot of stuff in there as far as the context. Mm-hmm. Certain age of people have better vocabulary than younger people, and would that type of context be worded that way? I mean, you really have to look at it. I mean, I've heard different versions, sure, but
yeah,
I think if you sat down and you made notes, you're going to realize you have missed some things, because a lot of people just look at the highlights.
Oh yeah,
they'll look at the highlights. And that's what they'll refer to.
Yeah.
People say, I've heard different things of, Jerry Frazier did it. Well, there's no way. We GPS his location. He had alibis. I mean, there was no way. There was, we ruled him out right away, and I won't get into the other stuff, but yeah, I want to stay as neutral as possible, but it turned out.
Yep. Like you said, the jury convicted him. He's in prison right now. Yep.
What do you want to know?
My little tagline at the end of all my podcasts is lock your doors, people. Is that good advice? No matter what community you live in? Because a lot of people say, it's the kind of town you don't have to lock your doors at night.
Oh, geez. You're making it too easy.
I don't think there's any kind of town where you shouldn't lock your doors at night, right?
I think you should lock your doors.
Yeah.
Yep.
A lot of crimes happen just because someone didn't lock their doors and they just walk right in.
Well, think of it this way. They're easier to solve when your doors are locked. Mm-hmm. There's more trace evidence left behind.
That's true. Okay. Do you ever give polygraph tests to people?
We do, but I do not administer them.
Is there someone here that does?
Not here. Lynn County or
other
agencies would supply that person.
Have you ever taken one?
Polygraph?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. I haven't.
Have you ever had someone take one?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah? Do you find them reliable? They're not admissible in court, are they?
No.
Yeah.
No. Well, it depends. Again,
Did Todd Mullis take one?
No.
No.
No, he didn't.
I would never take one. Because I think I would just look guilty.
That's your right. That's your right.
Oh, I want to do one though, like just a practice one, just to see. Like, I think they'd ask me my name, and it would come off as like lying because I'd be so nervous.
The needle'd go off the chart.
Yeah, it would. So tell me about all this stuff you're wearing. Body cam? Yeah? Is that what that is?
Yep.
And is it on right now?
No. No.
And then you've got Kevlar. And
yeah, we got our vest on.
That's a lot of weight you carry around.
Yeah, the gun belt's about 22 pounds.
Jeez, that's crazy.
But a lot of the guys wear exterior vests now.
Oh, okay.
So I just by choice, I'm in uniform now. But
is it uncomfortable?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
You know every pound you gain, let's put it that way.
Oh my gosh, okay. I have my permit to carry.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
I don't carry, but
it's a good thing to have.
Yeah, it is. Well, thank you so much for talking to me about this case today like local stuff. I'm so interested in so many things going on in our community. Sure. And this case, the Mullis case, was very fascinating to me, and I think you did a great job on it. So
thank you.
I really appreciate. I know you get a lot of requests for like media comments and things like that, and
I'm
glad that you let me interview you.
Sure. No
problem. Thank you so much, Travis.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Yeah. What do you think, you guys, about this episode with Travis Hemsath, lead detective on the Cornrake murder case? I enjoyed talking to him so much. I learned things I did not know before about the case, and it was awesome to get his perspective on it. We've got one more episode coming up, and then season 2 is over. So listen to that next. And until next time, lock your doors, people. Bye-bye. True Crime IRL is written, produced, and hosted by Kelly Barons Brink. Please subscribe to True Crime IRL wherever you get your podcasts and consider leaving a 5-star review. Go to truecrimeirl.com for more information. Support the show by becoming a Patreon donor. Go to patreon.com/truecrimeirlpodcast. You can also support the show by leaving a tip in the TCIRL tip jar. Go to truecrimeirl.com and click on the donate button. Or buy merch in the TCIRL merch shop. truecrimeirl.com/merch. Watch True Crime IRL on YouTube at youtube.com/KellyBrinkTV. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at True Crime IRL, all one word. True Crime IRL theme music is produced by The Captain at True Crime Garage.